Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Privilege for me to be holding down the fort for the host of the show. We head into the weekend. Get your sports fix here. Take your mind off the grind for a while and we'll get you squared away for the final weekend of July. Sean Carey here in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Friday show always brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Stock up for the weekend. Specials now through Tuesday. Keystone Light 18-pack cans are $10.99. The original Coors, the banquet beer, Coors original 24-pack bottles, $17.97. And Goose Island Variety 12-pack cans, $15.99. Check their Facebook page. And also, easy, convenient parking. Grab a dolly. Stack up those cases. They'll help you load up your car. Easy in, easy out. Load up on your snacks, too. Fresh roasted peanuts. And, of course, the pickle bar. Second to none. Brewers Outlet, the beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Also, when you stop in Brewers Outlet, you can get your tickets for the annual Lake Augusta Brew Festival. That'll be coming up in September along the River Wall in Sunbury. That'll be here before we know. That event has pulled in hundreds and hundreds of people every year. They had a beautiful day for that a couple of years ago. And I don't know who took the photo of it. There was like a sky shot looking down toward the river. And there was just a sea of people from stand to stand to stand checking out all the great brews and entertainment. So something to check out. Find out how to get your tickets when you stop by Brewers Outlet. Just ask them for Lake Augusta Brew Festival tickets. All right, our Best of Steve Jones show continues, and we've got a couple of authors this hour. Back in a little over a month and a half ago, we spoke with Jim Miller. He's the writer of several books, including one on Saturday Night Live and ESPN. And also we'll have a chat with John U. Bacon. We had John on the show last week. He did a project with the late, great John Saunders of ESPN. It took 4 years to come together. The book will be released very soon. We'll tell you more about that later this hour. We will also tell you about a Pitt Panther football suspension that will have an impact on the Penn State game. So that is up in just a moment. First off, our play-by-play call of the day. The Yankees with a walk-off winner in extra innings last night.
There goes Denny Bright. It is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a walk-off. Brett Gardner has a walk-off home run in the bottom of the 11th. It's a Gardy party. He plants one in the right field seats. Gardy goes yardy. And the Yankees win the ball game 6-5. Ball game over. Yankees win. Yankees win.
John Sterling, Sports Radio 66, 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York. Yankees getting that win last night. And in the process, during that celebration at home plate, Aaron Judge took a helmet to the face. Or he broke a tooth in that celebration. So watch out. Be careful when you're out there having fun. But he's a rookie. Chalk that up for the rookie, right? I don't think that'll ever happen to him again. So, all right, so we told you a second about Pitt Panthers football. Head coach Pat Narduzzi has thrown down some disciplinary actions today. Standout safety Jordan Whitehead, he will not be playing in the Penn State game. He has been suspended for the first three games of the season. Also out, according to Narduzzi, senior defensive end Rory Blair. He actually missed the Pinstripe Bowl last December. So, very good chances he will not be coming back to the team again. Also suspended senior linebacker Quinton Wirginis. for the same amount of time as Whitehead. And offensive lineman, suspended redshirt junior Alex Buxer, he's going to be out for the season opener against Youngstown State. So you get the first three games for Pitt are Youngstown State, Penn State, and Oklahoma State. And their best player, Jordan Whitehead, is going to miss the first three. He's going to miss all three of those games. In a statement earlier today, Narduzzi said, "Our program's foundation will be built on discipline and personal responsibility. These are highly disappointing situations. I'm hopeful each of these young men will be better, stronger, and wiser after taking accountability for these actions." So this comes down today, 4 days prior to the start of Pitt Panthers beginning practice for the 2017 season. Pitt Penn State play at Beaver Stadium on September the 9th. Of course, we will have that for you here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Be with you till 5, and then we'll have our late day news roundup with Sarah Benick, and then we go to Phillies baseball tonight, 6:30 for warm-up, and on deck, 7:05 first pitch. The Phillies will start a weekend series with the Atlanta Braves through Monday. Monday's going to be an afternoon game, so we will have no Steve Jones show on Monday. Steve's back on Tuesday. Jeremy Hellickson on the mound tonight for the Phillies, record 6-5. Burning question is, will this be Hellickson's last game as a Philly before the trade deadline comes down at 4 p.m. on Monday? So about a month and a half ago, we had here on the show Jim Miller, James Miller, a writer, executive producer, media consultant. A couple of years ago, to mark the 40th anniversary of Saturday Night Live, he wrote the complete uncensored history of SNL, as told by its stars, writers, and guests. Close to 5 years ago, he had a very informative book on ESPN. Those guys have all the fun inside the world of ESPN. And that book came to light earlier this year, especially in April, when another round of dismissals happened at ESPN. So it was the perfect time to have Jim Miller join us.
Very pleased to bring in someone who's been very, very much demand over the years, and especially now, and that is Jim Miller, author of several books, including Those Guys Have All the Fun Inside the World of ESPN. Jim, thanks for the time. Welcome to the show. It's really great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, so you looked at the model that they put together. I want to go back to the era of the book that you wrote about. There was, you know, Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann were very high-powered, personality-driven, among many personality-driven individuals there. Did they cause ESPN to change the model over the years because of the strength of their personalities?
Well, I think so. I think that, you know, prior to the 90s, let's say, ESPN, I mean, Chris Berman was around, and in some ways he was a bit atypical, but really what they wanted was those four initials to be the star. And they wanted to have highlights and live events and all their programming to be really what brought people in, because, you know, they were very focused early on in their history on not having to pay a lot for talent. And the feeling a lot of the executives there had was, when you start to create superstars, then they start holding you up for money. And so they always wanted to make sure that they weren't dependent on anybody. But then all of a sudden you had, you know, Keith and Dan, Robin Roberts, Bob Lee, Charlie Steiner, Craig Kilborn, Rich Eisen, you can go on. And they basically, you know, had this kind of metamorphosis of such in terms of their strategy. And they had these incredibly popular sports center shows throughout the day, and it really took off. I mean, the first time ESPN was on the cover of TV Guide was with pictures of Dan and Keith.
Exactly right. And again, you and I saw the beginnings of ESPN. That was Australian rules football early in the morning, rugby, and wow, we're getting highlights of every game. The novelty of it, especially in the early 80s, was incredible.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because a lot of people didn't think ESPN would survive because they said, well, nobody wants to watch sports 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they had it backwards. It wasn't that people needed to watch sports 24 hours a day. It's that sports would be available 24 hours a day. Right. And that wound up being just something that was, you know, incredibly irresistible for a lot of fans. And as a result, I mean, from in the 80s and in the 90s, ESPN's growth was spectacular, just spectacular. One of the most, probably arguably one of the most successful media stories of all time.
No question about it. Over time, though, what changed, Jim, in your opinion?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, last year my son graduated from college, and I made the mistake of saying to him, well, listen, what time is the cable company coming? Because we don't want to miss that. And he looked at me like I was, you know, on crack. Because he's like, yeah. What are you talking about? Like, we're, you know, they're not calling the cable company this generation. And in fact, ESPN has gone from roughly 100 million homes several years ago to now about 88 million. They lost 12 million homes in several years. And when you think about the fact that each one of those homes was paying about $7 a month, so that gets to be a serious amount of money. So all of a sudden, the economic model, that dual revenue stream that had been working so well for them for decades, became, you know, really under pressure.
They pay $1.9 billion a year for Monday Night Football, plus an additional $100 million for a playoff game where they lose money on as well. They pay $1.4 billion a year now for the NBA, and then there's the college football playoff. I believe when you put it all together, they're paying about $7 to $8 billion a year in rights fees. Jim, explain to me how this entered in and the decision-making that was made for these rights fees as to whether they were necessary or not in their model.
Right. Well, that's a great question. Look, when John Skipper became president of ESPN, he believed that the future of ESPN was inextricably linked with live events. And he went on one of the great shopping sprees in the history of broadcasting, because not only did he, like, you know, for the World Cup, for instance, he outbid Fox by $90 million. I mean, so not only did he aggressively bid on properties, but what he also did was he engineered longer contracts. So in the past, there were like 3 or 4 years, maybe 5, and all of a sudden, now ESPN signing 8-year deals, 9-year deals, 10-year deals. And so as a result, the strategy was to build a huge moat around ESPN, which is to say that if anybody came along, as it happened, Fox Sports, Fox FS1 did, and wanted to compete with them, there wasn't going to be a lot of inventory that they were going to be able to get, because they had, you know, sewn up so much. They had a long-term deal with Monday Night Football. They spent $27 billion on college football in, you know, with a lot of long-term deals. So as a result, they really made themselves, I guess, you know, Teflon-coated in terms of people being able to steal some of these properties away from them.
There's also a part that's not talked about often. They tried to, in six or seven, they tried to lowball the Big Ten on a number. And Jim Delaney said, well, if you do that, you know, we might just start our own network. And they're like, yeah, sure you will. And he did. What have regional networks and specialty networks meant?
Well, look, one of the things that ESPN has done well is they've learned by their mistakes. So when the Big Ten network happened, what was the result? You see what they've done with the SEC network. And so they got a big piece of that. So all of a sudden, they started to understand that they had to be flexible in terms of their model. And they weren't the only game in town. And the conferences had their ability to engineer some of these things, just like the Big Ten. Delaney was savvy. He was very smart. And by the way, not only did he get his Big Ten network, but he still got Fox and ESPN to spend some major bucks for the property as well.
Right, and yeah, it'll be $240 million a year from Fox, about $190 million from ESPN. Plus, he still has BTN, he still has CBS doing college basketball for him. So, yeah, I mean, it's worked out well for the Big Ten. So, we just saw this series of layoffs, but there's still going to be cord cutting going on. Is this something that might become an annual event, or something every couple of years where ESPN again has to cut salaries?
That's the key question. We are, you know, it's very rare. Sometimes you see incredible disruption and revolutionary change years later, and you look back and you go, boy, that was such a decisive time. And, you only know it in retrospect. This is a case where, like, the world is, I mean, cats and dogs are living together. We're watching the media landscape fundamentally change, and we know it's happening while it's happening. And so, as a result, I don't think there are many guarantees. I'm not sure what the ecosystem is going to look like several years from now. I don't think ESPN is sure. What they're trying to do, though, is they are trying to make sure that they have as many, you know, sorry for the cliche, but as many logs on the fire as possible. So if one of these possible, or two or whatever, three of these possible alternative revenue streams work, then they're able to capitalize it. That's why you saw them making, you know, investments in BAM. That's why you see them trying to do some really interesting things in the digital space. And also, at the same time, try and keep their competitors away from, you know, inventory that they care desperately about. But there are no guarantees. I mean, will there be more layoffs? There could be. You just don't know what this, you know, there's different analysts who say the cord cutting is going to slow down, and also some of the other possible, you know, ways that they're going in terms of live streaming fees and all these other networks, some of that may be able to make up for what they're losing. But I have to say that I think that ESPN has finally heard the clarion call to adapt or die.
Here's the next part. Jim, what's your sense of where Disney comes down on where ESPN is right now?
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it? I mean, look, for years, ESPN was throwing this money at their parent in Burbank at Disney, and Disney went out and bought Pixar and bought all these amazing, they used the money very well. Bob Iger is an incredibly savvy executive. But, look, if they're not throwing off a lot, as much profit as they used to, some people think they should either spin off ESPN, sell ESPN. The one thing that I think Disney has become aware of is that the guaranteed, for years, there was a period of at least 7 years where the cable increases were 20% every year compounded. Can you imagine? I mean, that's enough to make you a Bolshevik. I mean, there's so much money coming in. But you know what? Disney has figured out that there are no guarantees anymore, and that rate of growth can't be counted on. So your question is an excellent one, because it speaks directly to the uncertainty, not just in Bristol, Connecticut about ESPN, but also, for that matter, to Disney. And so Disney can't count on those huge increases coming in every year.
You also wrote the book about Saturday Night Live, which was great. And now, of course, this one, I believe you collaborated with Tom Shales on the ESPN book, correct?
Right.
Yeah. I think this is a difficult question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you were to rewrite the book today, how different a product would it be compared to the one you did turn out?
On ESPN?
Yes.
Well, I think that that was 6 years ago it came out, and I think that it was an accurate story. I'd like to think that it was an accurate story up to that point. The book did not really look forward, and which is why a lot of people have asked me if I'm going to do a volume two, because things have changed over the past 6 years.
This is why I asked.
Yeah, well, there you go. I'm kind of trying to wrestle with it. You know, these books are, you don't date them, you marry them. And so I'm just trying to make sure that, I'm ready to go back into those waters. I mean, I like writing about ESPN. I like tweeting about it. I like, talking about it. But to do a whole other book is climbing Everest on a cold day in your shorts. I just got to make sure I'm ready for it.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of people don't realize that, Jim. I've had two good friends that have written books. One's written three or four of them, and another one's working on one right now. And they talk about the all-encompassing that you've got to be, as the writer, invested almost every single day in what you're doing, from organization to getting your thoughts and then making it coherent, the whole thing, that the process is not an easy process to go through. Does that sound like a fair evaluation?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, there are people, there are men and women working in coal mines right now, and, you know, I mean, I don't want to play victim here, but I think that in order to do, especially these, you know, I've done three Saturday Night Live, ESPN, and CAA, the Hollywood Talent Agency, I think you just got to live and breathe it, and you got to be unrelenting, and sometimes it's, all of a sudden, you feel like you're about to finish one part of it, and you have a conversation. You learn some things and you do some reporting, all of a sudden that opens up a door into a room that has 12 other doors. So, you know, it's like, you know, at some point it's beyond all consuming. And you just have to figure out a way to just force yourself to stop.
Jim, it was an absolute pleasure. We've been hoping to get you on. It was worth every second of it. Thank you so much, and I hope at some point we can have you on again.
I'd be happy to. And by the way, my no BS, my compliments, because sometimes, you know, people get use a lot of incorrect numbers with ESPN, and your research was excellent, and your numbers were right on target, and I really appreciate that, and it's, you know, it says a lot about you and your show.
Well, thank you, Jim. We appreciate that very much. Thank you. We'll do this again sometime, because I probably could probably talk to you for another 3 or 4 hours on this.
All right. Well, look forward to it. Take care. Thank you for asking me.
Author Jim Miller. Check out his books. You can go to jamesandrewmiller.com, his website, for more information on the Creative Artists Agency, the book he did on that, as well as Saturday Night Live. And, of course, those guys have all the fun inside the world of ESPN. Our Friday edition of the Steve Jones Show, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the Beverage Supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury, as we spend time for Steve in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Get some news headlines here from Sarah Benick next, and then at 4:35, joining Steve will be John U. Bacon on WKOK.
Four city blocks of new Ford trucks. Over 40,000 trucks sold. SMC is where you want to be. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 110 new Ford trucks. And during July, they'll include a complimentary accessory package with the purchase of any new F-150. Through July 31st, receive a tonneau cover, molded splash guards, and window deflectors at no additional charge. SMC is where you want to be, because they have the largest selection of new Ford trucks in all of Central Pennsylvania.
And that means the biggest savings.
Take up to $13,500 off on new F-150s. And SMC has them starting as low as $23,919. Save up to $7,000 on 2017 Ford Escapes. And they're slashed as low as $19,380. Explorers, Edges, and Expeditions have discounts up to $11,000. SMC is where you want to be in July for this mega summer spectacular sale and the complimentary F-150 accessory package. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
F-150 accessory package valued at $699. Excludes prior sales and ordered units.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sean Carey here for Steve. He'll be back on Tuesday. Our show today brought to you by Brewers Outlet, the Beverage Supermarket, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Take advantage of these great deals through Tuesday. Keystone Light 18-pack cans, $10.99. Coors, the Banquet Beer, Coors Original, 24-pack bottles, $17.97. And Goose Island Variety, 12-pack cans, $15.99. That and so much more at Brewers Outlet on Reagan Street in Sunbury. As we continue the best of the Steve Jones Show this week, John U. Bacon is on with us now. Had a chance to speak with John originally a little over a week ago. His brand new book is going to be released on August the 8th, Playing Hurt, My Journey from Despair to Hope, a book that he wrote with the late, great John Saunders of ESPN. Here is Steve and John U. Bacon.
John, I want to start actually with your book on John Saunders, which is coming out next month. Number one, what compelled you to say that's an interesting subject, which now, of course, has gone to a different level because of everything that's happened along the way, but what compelled you to say that was an interesting subject?
More a gut reaction, Steve, than any logical assessment of the marketplace or any of that stuff. John and I were friends since, I think, 1998 when we played hockey together in some charity outing. John played college hockey, actually. He was quite good, a guy from Montreal, which a lot of folks didn't know. We stayed in touch, and then after John had this bad fall, this accident, in 2011, where he stood up too fast, blacked out, fell backwards, and was unconscious for a while, he had to go into the hospital for 6 weeks to relearn how to walk and talk and read and write. And that, of course, brought on some depression, which got scary for a while, and he came out of that. And when he did, we started talking about doing this as a book. And I just thought, on faith, yeah, let's do this. And for 4 years, we worked without a contract or the promise of one. We finally got one, and it all worked out pretty well. And then, tragically, John died of natural causes in August of last year. But it was not, I can assure you, Steve, a rational decision. When I met you for the first time in 2012, and I'm there to follow the Penn State team during that amazing season, that was obviously a national story that I thought, when you take the player's perspective, you'd have a real feel-good story. This was purely on faith.
Yeah, purely on faith. But along the way, everyone has their own story, and within that story, there are certain elements that no one realizes until it's revealed. What in John's story did he reveal along the way to you that you hadn't realized that also took you aback?
Well, I knew probably more than most just from talking to John over the years and more, I guess, confidential ways, and he'd talk with his colleagues because I didn't work at ESPN, of course. Nonetheless, when he gets into his story, even his best friends, Bob Lee and Chris Berman, guys I know you know at ESPN all those years, they knew John, they felt as well as anybody, and they had no idea that John grew up with physical abuse, sexual abuse, self-medication, drugs and whatnot, self-mutilation, a history of concussions, and a history of depression that at times would get very, very severe. And John, you'd never guess when you met him, and you probably have many times. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you meet him, and that's not phony. He was outgoing, friendly, sincere, down to earth, all those great things. It just was not the whole story.
No, it was not the whole story. And at one point, and depression can drive anybody to this, at one point he considered maybe taking his own life.
More than once, actually, in the time we focus on in the book that we start the book with, in 2011, 2012, about 6 months after this bad accident, he said that, and this applies to what we do, Steve, in the football world, we talk a lot about concussions and whatnot, and John made clear, look, concussions don't make you depressed. Losing your faculties, your short-term memory, your ability to do certain things, and not knowing if you're ever going to get that ability back, said that will make you depressed. It's not the same right. thing. And that's what John was dealing with when he tried to come back too soon on ESPN and made a lot of mistakes on air. And Steve, poor you and me, we know that these days when you make a mistake on air, there'll be 10 of your friends on Twitter to tell you all yes. about it. And that was a new world for yeah. John. So that was getting him down. And that's where he had suicidal thoughts. I guess the positive part of the story, and there's more positive than negative for sure, is that depression is, A, it's a disease. It's not just, you don't just snap out of it. So if you have it, get help and get your friends help. Two, it's very treatable. In the vast majority of cases, you will it'll get much better or you will come out of it entirely. But you got to get help, and that's one of John's big messages. The reason it's written from John's point of view, he's on a train with Joe Biden, the former vice president, after a conference on mental health at the White House with Bradley Cooper from the Playbook movie, of course, Glenn Close and others. Biden said, you know, you can come out as a gay football or basketball player these days, and it's less of a big deal than coming out with depression, because nobody ever has during their careers. It's amazing. And John realized that this is what his role has to be. Military guys, athletes, African Americans are three groups that are least likely to get help when they face this, which is why, sadly, after all this nonstop war we've had, that many of those people have committed suicide, and one reason why is they don't get help. So that is the message.
All right, thank you. He is a trailblazer, and I wish John was around for this victory lap, basically, to get this embrace from the world. People who've read it already, Adam Schefter, Bob Lee, Chris Berman, have already gushed about it because John was utterly forthcoming. And it takes a breakthrough guy like that to do it. John had almost nothing to gain by writing this book. I mean, the money you make from a book ain't what they pay you at ESPN these days. So it's not the money, and as far as fame goes, I believe John had that. So what you're going to lose is your privacy, basically, and not just yours, but also, to a degree, that of your family and your brother and so on. So you had to talk to them first as well and get their approval. But he wanted to do it for two reasons. One is he wanted to come clean himself and have that catharsis. And two, he wanted to help as many people as he could. That he felt was the one big thing he could do in his role as a well-known sportscaster is to get the word out. So in that sense, we, after John passed away and we'd finished what we thought was a near final draft, John's wife, his brother, and I all decided, look, we got to do this. This is exactly what John wanted, and we know he wanted this. So let's finish it up. And so far, the response has been very positive.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I can't wait to sit down and read it myself. I've got to get into the five-year anniversary of the sanctions coming down. You were there and were embedded. This is when you were trying to look at Ohio State, Northwestern, Michigan, Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
As you're going through all of this and putting it together, now you look back on 5 years, where Penn State is now compared to where this began. What is your thought and your impression?
Well, I'll say this as loudly as I can, and I'm sure the NCAA will not listen, because they never have, that the quote-unquote culture at Penn State is as strong as ever, and that is why Penn State is in the recovery process, if you will. The football program seems to be almost where it was 5 years ago, basically. Their recruiting has been fantastic under Franklin. They are, what, top 10 team last year? The world has kind of righted itself. Obviously, you've got court cases. You've got jail time. It's not, you know, it's a serious business. It's not just about football. But I've never heard anybody, I have to tell you this, Steve, and we've talked about this before, nobody I've ever talked to associated with Penn State, a fan of Penn State, has ever made light of Sandusky or the situation that has all brought in. But the separation has to be made between the people who are responsible and the players and the team. And that's what I focused on, Mike Motti and Zordich and those guys you love, I love. And other fans love. And in that sense, it was the culture when the whole world was against them that stayed strong throughout, and that culture is what you see today. Now, I think that on that front, the old Michigan athletic director, Don Canham, had the best line on PR I have ever heard, and it's this: never turn a one-day story into a two-day story. My advice to the leaders of Penn State is this thing has been put to rest. The ruins have come down and all the rest. Let all that go and call that good. Get back to being Penn State full blast, and that culture is very strong, and you see it on the field and off the field.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this question before, because you were working with three other programs at the time. You know, so you do a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit there. As this was happening to Penn State, in the other three programs that you were working with and embedded with, what was their reaction to what was going on at that particular time here?
I can tell you this. That's a great question, by the way, and nobody ever asked me that in the entire book tour. So good for you, Steve. As usual, you always get a few in there that no one else ever thought of. That at Northwestern, Michigan, Ohio State, even Michigan State, I spent some time there, even Notre Dame, not one person inside those programs who run those programs and those departments and those universities, none of them wagged their finger, sat in judgment, clucked their tongues, any of that. Almost all of them had the same reaction, which was they
there, but for the grace of God, go we. In a campus that has 40,000 employees, something like that, you just knock on wood and hope to God that everyone behaves themselves, basically. And if they don't, you hope the people in charge, you know, do the right things as fast as they can. So there was no smugness whatsoever from the other programs that I detected. What they did have, from the football point of view, is a great deal of respect to Bill O'Brien, of course, then the coach of the team, but especially the seniors. It's not that often that you know seniors outside the program as senior leaders, but the whole Big Ten knew Mike Mauti and Mike Zordich, thanks to ESPN and other things like that. But man, you talk to Coach Fitzgerald, you talk to D'Antonio, talk to Urban Meyer about the guys on Penn State's team, and they knew exactly the kind of players they wanted on their team. In the book, the longest quote in the book, as long as quote I've ever used from anybody, goes about a page, and it's from Urban Meyer, and it's about the Penn State-Ohio State game of 2012. And he said, look at that game for a minute. You know, we're on probation, they're on probation. We're not going to a Big Ten title game, they're not going either. We're not going to a bowl game, they're not going either. We're both having the whole country turn their backs on us. We're dealing with all this crap. And yet, in that game, what do you see? A packed house at Penn State, a whiteout, a great night game, and not one player on either team took a single play off. What are they fighting for? They're fighting for their teammates, their classmates, their school, the lettermen, the alumni, the fans. They're fighting for all the things you love about college football, nothing more. He said that was a great example of the spirit of college football. And when he finished that quote, I looked to his PR guy, Jerry Amig, a guy I'm sure you know, and I said, damn, I can't say it any better than that. And as Mark Twain said, Steve, if the guy said it better than you can, quote him. So that's what I did. And that was the typical reaction to what Penn State was doing at that time.
Amazing. And, yeah, John, we go back to, I'll tell you, the documentary I really enjoy is Tiebreaker, and you're in it a lot. And something that really, you remember you said, Don Canham said, don't make a one-day story, a two-day story.
Oh, yeah.
Tiebreaker is a four-decade story.
I might quote you on that, Steve. I'm afraid you're right. That's 43, 44 years ago. And Mike Lantry, the kicker in that game, is probably going to be honored this fall at Michigan Stadium, so it never dies.
Good. All right. I'm glad he will. But something that's important about that is that they've never once released what the vote is. And if they had just released the vote, they could have put a whole bunch of stuff to bed.
Exactly. And, I mean, I don't get into politics when I do sports. I know you don't either. It's a losing argument.
Right.
And I'm not going to get into politics here, but I can say when you look at the campaigns, both campaigns the last year and a half, man, don't turn a one-day story into a two-day story. Take your medicine, you know, bite the bullet and be done with it. And you'll take a hit, but it'll be short, and we get over it very quickly. And when I consult with corporations about this stuff, I say, look, apologies in the press are incredibly boring. This guy shows up, we screwed up, we did X, Y, and Z, we're going to fix it, here's how. We go, huh, we write it down, and as you know, Steve, we walk away. Next story. Somebody else somewhere is going to screw up. Don't worry about it. But if you give us a cover-up, wow, that's fascinating. So that's what they did in the tiebreaker thing. To this day, this is before, of course, Penn State got, you know, started playing 20 years later in the Big Ten. But yeah, the vote was either 6-4 or 5-4-1 or we don't know what, but Ohio State got the nod to go to the Rose Bowl, which does affect Penn State, because after that they realized that it was a silly rule to have only one Big Ten team go to a bowl game, the Rose Bowl, or bust. So Michigan at 10-0-1, ranked fourth in the nation, didn't go anywhere. And for 3 years, they were 30 wins, two losses, one tie, no bowl games during that stretch. And so that changed the whole bowl picture, which is why almost every Big Ten team that can still stand at the end of the season goes to a bowl game. But those are the ripples. But yeah, I mean, you think you're being cute and clever by trying to keep things to yourself. It rarely works.
It rarely works. We're also, I want to take just a quick glimpse. I want to get your opinion about the future of this thing, because the new Fox TV contract, along with everybody else, starts this year. But then after that, We might see Amazon. We might see who knows what we're going to see. What do you see as the future of college sports, you know, in your mind? And these, and, because the model is changing so much right now. Do we have four super conferences? Does everybody expand one more time? I, you know, because I, no offense, but I think the Big Ten's, to be honest with you, might be too big. But that's just me. Now, I thought 12 was a great number, but that, you know, that's only a personal opinion. What do you think might happen with this model? That how much we love college football, you and I love it, but can they ruin it?
Yes and yes. For usual, Steve, we agree on just about everything here, different perspectives, but the same conclusions, I would say, that when Penn State was added to the Big Ten, that was a very popular addition. And I learned in the process of writing Fourth and Long, which is mainly the Penn State book, that Penn State was brought in as Northwestern insurance, because at the time, Northwestern was flirting with the Ivy League to leave the Big Ten, because they had no success for basically 15, almost 20 years. So Penn State was there in case they dropped out. I did not realize that. And then, of course, they added Nebraska about 5 years ago, also a very popular addition, and almost a counterbalance to Penn State. Very similar programs, I think. Very similar cultures, very similar attitudes. I know there's a lot of respect there. And I thought, like you, 12, that gets it done. You can have your divisions. You can have your Big Ten title game. It all is contiguous. It's all similar culture. And no knock against Maryland or Rutgers, but those are not Big Ten teams. They're just not. Penn State felt like one immediately to the Big Teners. Nebraska, same thing. And again, you know, Maryland is a charter member of the ACC, and more power to them, but that's their culture, basically. So I think that was a mistake, and I think in the process you do risk alienating the hardcores. Whenever you go to a Big Ten bar, and I've been to a few, Steve, including Penn State, of course. It's all about research, Steve, all about research.
Absolutely. We all do. In fact,
thank
it's
you.
Research.
Oh, yeah, it's just hard-hitting investigative journalism. That's all that is right there.
That's right.
But anyway, on that front, you go to almost any Big Ten bar in Iowa City or State College or Madison, Wisconsin, and you will see the banners of all the schools up there. But you don't see that anymore because no one cares about Rutgers and Maryland. So there is that risk. I think on the TV front, Big Ten Network has been a great boon for the Big Ten. That's how you got Nebraska in the first place. It has, you know, made it the most lucrative conference by far in college football, college sports. And, of course, you know, Ohio State and Penn State are up there every year amongst all athletic programs, all sports, and that's one of the reasons. But I think you're right. This golden goose is getting squeezed awfully hard. And I've seen it at Penn State. I've seen it at Ohio State. And I really saw it at Michigan during the Dave Brennan era, where you're down to 60,000 fans in the stands during the end there. That's bad news. You have to understand that these college football fans are college football fans. They're fans. They're not customers. They're not clients. They are irrational. To them, it's a religion. And Ed Zetters used to be the pastor of the Methodist Church in downtown State College. Great guy. He said to me, it's part of, yeah, you know, Ed, and he said, it's part of worldwide Methodism that you need more than food and shelter to live a full life. You need values to stand for, people to stand with, and a place to stand with them. And he said, I do a pretty good job here in State College of doing that on Sundays in my church, but I can't help but notice the church down the street holds 108,000 true believers. And so you better get that. We can all stay home. We can all watch on TV. You know, no line for the bathrooms, and you can drink beer and everything else. So why do you drive 4, 6, 7 hours to State College? It's a religion. And don't forget that, and don't push it too hard.
One final question, John, I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for your time.
Oh, sure.
As always. You talked about Don Canham and the respect for Don Canham. I've been talking to Jim Tarman over the years, you know, when Don Canham's name would come up, and Jim had such respect for him, and so did Joe. And obviously, Joe really respected Bo. You went through a period of time where it was a business model at Michigan. You mentioned Dave Brandon. Has now Michigan started to feel like, to you, Michigan again, based on where they are in the athletic department and program?
Yeah, I think much more so. They brought back Ward Manuel, who played for Bo Schembechler in the 90s, and spent his life in athletics, which I think helps. I know Sandy Barber, similar background, not a football player, of course, but a lifetime athletic department personnel employee.
Right.
That matters, I think. I think that, yeah, the business side matters, but, man, if you don't get the coaches and the fans right, it won't matter much. So it's going in the right direction, but Michigan's still not out of the woods, I would say, that you lost about 20 or 30,000 fans, maybe forever, during the Brandon era. And what I worry about with the Big Ten in general is the ticket prices are so high at the biggest schools, and again, the three biggest by far are Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan. And Nate Silvers, the Politico, he figured out that those three schools have got more fans nationwide than the entire Pac-12. It's 3.2 million for Ohio State, 2.9 for Michigan, 2.6 for Penn State, last I checked, and that's bigger than most conferences, so it's pretty amazing. But I don't see kids very often. And I'm a kid in Ann Arbor going for $2 a game, pretty easy. Now it's, you know, a couple hundred bucks. That's, you bring a client, not a kid. And so I think that, to look out for the next generation 10, 20 years down the road, we got to make sure the kids are still involved.
So spot on. Appreciate it, John. You know we could have done this for about 3 or 4 hours.
One of these days, Jones, we will.
Yes, one of these days we will, Bacon. John, it is always a pleasure. I will hopefully talk to you very, very soon. Good luck with the book. I can't wait to read it.
Real simple, Steve. You call, I answer anytime, my friend. I always have a great time talking to you.
John U. Bacon here on the Steve Jones Show. We hope you enjoyed our best of week. Steve will be back in the Sunbury Motor Studio on Tuesday. We're off on Monday because of Phillies baseball. Have a great weekend. News Radio 1070 WKOK.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.